Alrighty, welcome back in. Hour number two of our radio program. We'll be joined by the legendary Roy Williams coming up in just a bit. Obviously won three NCAA championships with UNC, also coach Kansas as well. And coach is doing a really neat thing. We'll have him tell you more about it just coming up in a few moments. I watch a lot of college basketball this week. I actually think I'm going to the St. John's UConn game coming up this weekend on Sunday. But St. John's had a very nice victory up against Creighton. And then I was all over that 1-2 matchup on Saturday. Game day was all over Alabama and Auburn, and you had that great 1-2 matchup. And Bruce Pearl, the only thing missing on his resume is a national championship, right? He won a Division II national championship. He's now won conference championships and then also got to a Final Four at Auburn. He has the number one team in the country, and Coach Pearl is going to join us coming up in about an hour 20 from now. But that was a fun basketball game, and you got to see Auburn prevail up against Alabama. But let's go out to the guest line right now and talk to a man that knows a thing or two of what it's like to win this time of the year. And that, of course, the legendary coach Roy Williams. And Roy Williams spending time with us today on behalf of Verizon. And I'm a Verizon customer, but get this. He's personally calling up people in Western Carolina to tell them their debts of necessity are being wiped out. Verizon is erasing $10 million in debt for 6,500 people in North Carolina still recovering from Hurricane Helen. And now joining us, of course, is Roy Williams. Coach, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this. And how you been?
I've been doing well, except on game nights when the other team scores more points. I don't enjoy that part, but it's been a great time for us. And I've loved what I was able to do this morning, talking to some people who have gotten the relief of their debt from Verizon. And I've loved that, seeing the hope get a little bit better in their eyes. And I think that's the biggest thing that Verizon is doing. They're giving more people hope that other people do care. And North Carolina was devastated. And I saw pictures and the whole bit. I was in South Carolina when it hit. I came straight back to North Carolina. But until you go through the mountains of North Carolina, you go in Asheville and see the places that I knew so well as a kid, and it's just devastating. And seeing it on TV is not like seeing it live, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and when you have people's lives that are literally flipped upside down because of Hurricane Helene, and you're able to provide them a moment of joy today, just what is that like? What have those conversations been like when you get to tell them that they're wiping out the debt?
It's been a really neat thing. You know, I'm old school, and people may not know what neat means, but it's been a really neat thing to me. A couple of the people got very emotional. One mom kept saying, thank you, I appreciate it. She said she couldn't hardly think of anything else to say, but she was very emotional. And times are tough. We have a lot of difficult things going on in our world right now, but in Western North Carolina, particularly with what Verizon's doing for the victims of Hurricane Helene, is just incredible. And it has been a neat deal for me to talk to those people. And Verizon has something they're saying is, we will always stand by you. And I'm an old soul music kind of guy, stand by me kind of thing. But I love that idea, and the way that we can talk to those people has been, again, really neat for me.
Yeah, and Coach, I always admire how you help people out. You know, I do a weekly spot in football season on sports radio on WFNZ, and they used to air my show when I was in a different time slot. And I've become very close with two of the hosts there, Mac and Bone, and their community. And I remember just a little while back when, unfortunately, our buddy Mark from Gastonia did pass away, when we knew that the end was coming, you sent a very nice video to him. I've always just admired that about you, where, right, you have made it in life. You're a creme de la creme basketball coach, and you're always willing to try to put a smile on people's faces.
Well, when you see Roy Williams, it's hundreds of people that helped me throughout my entire life, because the story was not a smooth beginning, but so many people helped. And I do think that the more you give, the more you give, the more you receive. And I believe that deep in my soul. And, you know, what I'm doing this morning is just calling people and saying, hey, somebody's taking care of part of your debt. It's not like I'm doing anything that's really hard. And I enjoy people. I've always liked being around people. And this area here has just been hit so hard, Zach. It's unbelievable what it looks like when you see it in person.
Roy Williams here with us, a legendary college basketball coach. It's crazy how many years, right, you've no longer been coaching at UNC now. When you look back at your career this time of the year, everyone's going to talk about the national championships, but it's so much more than that. When you look back at this journey spanning through all those years, just what are some of the memories and thoughts that come back to mind when you take a look back at what you were able to do?
Well, I try not to do that too much because I'm getting too old. But when I do, I think of the relationships. That's what I really miss. I miss coaching every single day. But what I miss are the practices, the locker room, the bus rides. I don't necessarily miss the games for sure, but it's something that I can tell it to you this way. I was a head coach for 33 years. I coached for 48 years, and nobody enjoyed it. Nobody enjoyed it more than I did. And so for me, I want to do some things that can help some people. I love watching the Tar Heels play. My oldest grandson played on the JV team this year at Myers Park in Charlotte, and I saw a lot of his games. And when I was a head coach at Kansas, my own son played 3 miles down the road from Allen Fieldhouse, and I missed over half of his games. And so I'm loving that part of it, but I do miss the coaching part of it. The relationships is the best thing to me.
Now, how about what college basketball is now? I'm all for players making money. I'm all for player empowerment, but relationships are tough to build this time of the year, especially with the transfer portal and all that stuff. College basketball, it's a business now, and that's not a secret. What are your thoughts on the new kind of format?
Well, it's definitely a business to a much higher degree than it was when I was coaching. It was a business then, but not anything like it is now. It's changed dramatically. I'm all in favor of NIL. I mean, all in favor of that. Problem is, I don't think that's what we have. You should be able to make some money if you rename, image, and likeness, but we've gotten into a pay-for-play thing, and I don't think that's what was intended. Now, is that going to be good or bad long term? I don't know. But I love the idea of a young man being able to make some money on his actions and what he's done. So I'm all for that, 100%. The loyalty factor with the transfer portal is really hard. The fact of the matter of pay for play is really hard. I used to try to recruit people and say, I'm going to see you. I'm going to be there more than anybody else. And now that's not quite as important. And so there's some negative things there, but I still say this, and I say it to every interview, and I'm doing a lot today. When that referee steps in and starts to throw that ball up, and it's Duke and North Carolina, that's what's going to be on people's mind watching that score, who's going to win that game. But I loved working with young men. I loved coaching, trying to take 13 to 17 guys and making them into the best five out there on the court at one time. That was a thrill and a job for me that I actually loved every minute of it every day.
And you look at it, right? When you walk away, when Coach K walks away, I totally understand it. But someone like Jay Wright, I understand if you don't want to do this anymore, you don't need to. And Jay's made a ton of money, has all the nice suits, all the championships, right? But it's just so unfortunate when a guy that is still pretty young at this walks away, which what I felt like a lot more to give. It's unfortunate for the sport.
Well, I think it is too. Lon Kruger, Tubby Smith, I can go on down the line. One of my favorites right now is Tommy Izzo and breaking Bob Knight. And Bob Knight was great for Roy Williams. He was a Coach Dean Smith was, needless to say, my biggest mentor by a million miles. But Coach Knight was great for me. Tommy Izzo is great. Everybody that's played at Michigan State has gained a great deal for playing for Tom Izzo. And I don't know how much longer it's going to be, whether it's going to be 5 years or 5 days. It depends, Big Tom. But he's a great friend, and I'm so happy for him this weekend. But I do believe that the young coaches are going to be okay. And everything's got to settle a little bit. When you come out and make dramatic changes, you have dramatic results. And I'm hopeful that things will calm down a little bit more and make it where people can enjoy their life as a college basketball coach like Roy Williams did.
I know that you've had three championship teams, and it's the 25th anniversary of your 2005 team, but I want to ask you about the most recent championship team that you had, just because I brought up Jay Wright. We all know what happened the year before, and then you guys come back and then you win it all. To get that moment for where you were 1 year to then what happened the following year, I know everyone wasn't there, but for the players that were there, just what did that mean to you to get that moment of redemption?
Well, I didn't even hear the word redemption in 17 until we got to the Final Four. And the players have sort of kept that to themselves. But in 16, when we lose to Jay's Villanova team, that was very deserving, and Jay's a great friend, it killed me in a certain way. I did not know what I could say to my team in the locker room. And the funniest thing is, I'm not big media guy, okay? Understand, it's not against what you're doing. But the next year, the very first practice, I let them mic me during practice. The
Really?
only time I've ever done that for a whole practice. And I looked around the circle. I blow the whistle and everybody runs to the circle. And this is practice number one. And I said, guys, last year we were there on Monday night. It didn't quite work out for us, the final result. But right here in front of me is a team that can be the last team standing on Monday night. I believe in this team. I believe in you. And we'd lost Marcus Paige and Bryce Johnson, arguably our two best players. Well, would you know, we go out and win the whole blessed thing. 2 weeks later, we have the basketball banquet, and they show that tape. I'd forgotten all about it. It made me look like I knew what the crap I was doing. But it was coming back in 17 and winning that, knowing how badly our team, including myself, felt in 16, and then feeling that. And I used to like to just back off a little bit and watch them jump around and act crazy. And I probably jumped around and acted crazy with them as much as anybody. But that was a neat time in the locker room for Roy Williams.
To get to today's version of the Tar Heels, there's a lot of conversation about someone you know very well in Hubert Davis and if he's still the right guy for the job. What do you say to people that are questioning that right now?
I used to say this about Roy Williams, that I had more desire and more want to in my little finger, more passion than all the Court Carolina fans put together. Hubert Davis may hold up his left hand because he writes left-handed, but he has more passion and more concern in his little finger than all those people put together. He's the right person for the job. It just makes me just cringe. I mean, why? What are people talking? His first year, he played for the national championship. His third year, he won the regular season. There's 811 teams in the ACC now, or something close to that. He won the regular season last year. And so we've had some tough moments this year. There's no question about that. But the season's not over. I think we're going to make a run here. And I would love for it to turn around 180 degrees so I could look at all those other suckers and tell them to shut up.
That's unbelievable. Coach,
how's that going to help your ratings?
That's good. You said you're not a radio guy. You just put the cherry on top of the sundae. I got to ask you this, and then we'll let you run. And I really appreciate the time today. The legendary Roy Williams with us. You're still as energetic as ever. You're still passionate. I think you get back on the sideline tomorrow and coach. Is that it? Or are you actually done? Or will you ever be open to returning to coaching college basketball?
No, I'm done. You know, I had the best job in the world for Roy Williams as a coach at North Carolina. And, you know, I've had a lot of people ask and some people offer me other jobs. And if I was going to work, I'd still be on the sideline with a whistle. And but no, I'm done. I've only missed two home games in 4 years. I go to see other schools play. I think I said to you, I saw Tennessee and Missouri play last week. I've been to see Michigan State play, West Virginia play, Kansas play, North Carolina A&T play against Monmouth, one of our former players, King Rice. But I love watching the game. I love being around the kids. But, no, I'm where I should be right now.
At this stage of your life, if it's not basketball related, what do you do for fun? Just wondering.
My grandkids, that's the most fun I have, is my family. I enjoy teeing it up on the golf course and talking a little trash. You know, I can talk trash as good as 74-year-old man in the world. But so I do enjoy those things. But my family is, I miss so many things, my own children. I'm trying to make sure that I don't miss it with my grandchildren.
That's unbelievable stuff. Well, once again, Coach is doing a wonderful thing today. Roy Williams is spending time with us today on behalf of Verizon. We're get this. He's personally calling up people in Western Carolina to tell them their debts of necessity are being wiped out. Verizon is erasing $10 million in debt for 6,500 people in North Carolina still recovering from Hurricane Helene. And, Coach, we really appreciate the time, and thanks for carving out a few minutes to keep up the great work.
Zach, thank you very much. And you did that nicely with Verizon. I've got two of their people here looking at me, and so they're saying I'm doing okay, and you did great.
Well, I got my phone right here, Verizon phone, ever since I was able to get a cell phone. So really do appreciate it. Thanks so much, Coach.
All right, thank you. Have a great day.
There you go. Coach Roy Williams joining us right there on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Just the definition of class. He's unbelievable. And, you know, I do that weekly hit in football season with the guy that listened, you know, to this show for a while, just a big listener of that WFNZ fan base, MFG, who's no longer with us, Mark from Gastonia. And I talked to him a lot, especially towards the end of his life. And he would always call Mac and Bone, and he would love my hits with them, and he would tweet me and things like that and DM me. And they had us do a bunch of videos to kind of cheer Mark up towards the end. And Roy Williams did one of those videos, man. And that dude, even when he doesn't need to, he's always willing to lend a helping hand. And it's so funny because even in that video, I'm pretty sure they did for MFG, and Mark is one of the all-time greats. He goes, you know, I'm not a big radio guy, but I'll help you out, MFG. So it's just, you know, when you're in a position like this, you could do a lot of good with your power, and Roy Williams definitely does that. All righty, coming up in about an hour, Bruce Pearl will join us as well after his huge victory over Alabama, a 1-2 showdown. Tigers are ranked first in the country. When we come on back, I did not think we'd be talking about Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin, but there's a new layer to this story that happened all those years ago when Joe Philbin was coaching the Miami Dolphins. We'll get to that when we come on back. So remember this entire Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin thing? I haven't thought about this in a long, long time. But it was Bullygate, right? Richie Incognito at the time was accused of bullying Jonathan Martin. And it impacted so many people's careers. And the NFL did one of their independent investigations, right? Another one of these Wells reports that is paid for by the NFL, but it's supposed to be an independent investigation. And Jonathan Martin, in an article the other day, he admitted he never felt like he was actually being bullied by Richie Incognito. There's a lot of layers here to unpack. Do I ever think it was to the level of extreme in the way that it was portrayed? No. Was this story a complete nothing burger, though? Absolutely not. If you recall, Richie Incognito left Jonathan Martin a voicemail. So multiple sources confirmed to ESPN that following is a transcript of a voice message Incognito left for Martin in April of 2013, a year after Martin was drafted. Here was the voicemail that Richie Incognito left. Hey, what's up, you half N-word piece of bleep. I saw you on Twitter. You've been training 10 weeks. I want to bleep in your bleeping mouth. I'm going to slap your bleeping mouth. I'm going to slap your real mother across the face. Laughter, bleep you. You're still a rookie. I'll kill you. So when you just hear that from Richie Incognito, you're a white guy calling a black guy a word that obviously you cannot use, nor should be used. But then, I didn't know this part. Incognito claims that a week before this went down, and this was an old article back on Pro Football Talk from November of 2013, that Incognito told Jay Glazer of Fox Sports, a week before this went down, Jonathan Martin texted me, I will murder your whole bleeping family. Now, did I think Jonathan Martin was going to murder my family? Not one bit, Incognito said. So I think this was one of those things where if you just read it without any context, you'd be like, yeah, Richie Incognito is a psycho. Richie Incognito is a bully. Richie Incognito is a villain. But then also, like, a lot of this is football culture too. Now, I'm not defending everything Richie Incognito did. I'm not doing that. But did it ever get to this point where Richie Incognito and what was being accused of him was 100% take it as you see it? No, it wasn't. And Jonathan Martin coming out the other day and saying, hey, I never felt like I was actually getting bullied. I think what we realize here, and Jonathan Martin has been through a lot, that there was a lot going on up there, and also Jonathan Martin was expected to be this great football player, and when he wasn't and he couldn't handle the league, his family and also himself allowed excuses to be made about an unhealthy work environment. Now, I know people that have been teammates of Richie Incognito. And they have spoke glowingly. The best teammate that you would ever want. Awesome, like great locker room guy, things like that. So it's interesting how there was the Jonathan Martin situation And then there's a lot of other situations where I get it. Hey, Richie Incognito is not a choir boy, right? Richie Incognito is not the definition of the greatest human being in the world. But you had Eric Wood, who came out the other day, and he said, "This cost my brother Richie Incognito's reputation so much money and more. I'm grateful the truth has come out, but too little, too late." So I did not think that we'd be going back to this whole story. But you look at some scandals that the NFL has recently seen, right? You look at Bountygate. You look at this bullying scandal. Even Deflategate, right? If you look at, and just in terms of, I'm not talking about someone murdering somebody else, right? I'm not talking about, issues off the field like domestic violence and people abusing children, because those things are a lot more serious than Bountygate, than Deflategate, or Bullygate, if we're being honest. But in terms of football matters only, in the last 15, 20 years, you look at the three scandals, and if you want to throw Spygate in there as well, but the three that I'm going to really mention are Deflategate, Bullygate, and then also Bountygate. I don't think any of the three were really ever as bad as the outrage and the dog and pony show that they become. Like, you look at Bountygate, do you think Greg Williams is the first person to say, "Hey, if you go knock out the other team's quarterback, you'll get a bonus"? You think he's the first coach to say that? Now, I'm not saying those things should happen, but did Sean Payton need to be out of football for an entire year? I don't think so. You look at this Bullygate situation, right? You had big bad Richie Incognito, who is not 100% perfect. I'm not giving Richie Incognito the benefit of the doubt. I'm not saying Richie Incognito is an innocent person here. But all these years later, Jonathan Martin comes out and says, "Hey, I never actually felt like I was getting bullied." You say that, the whole story goes right out the window, even though it's too little, too late. And then also, I'll never forget Deflategate. I was there. I'll never forget Ray Martell, who still works here. We went to Patriots-Colts, that AFC Championship game. You could have put a golf ball and give the Patriots a golf ball. They still would have beat the snot and beat the pants and beat the brakes off the Indianapolis Colts. And I'll never forget, right before the start of the second half, because our seats were right off the end zone, right behind the end zone. And I noticed that there was a little delay in starting the second half. And they kept on moving out the footballs. And I said to Ray, I go, "What's going on with the football? Something weird's happening." And then we got up the next day, and we were driving back to New York. Ray and I were road tripping together. And I said to Ray, "There's some report from this guy, Bob Kravitz, in Indianapolis. They're accusing the Patriots of cheating." It was actually late that night when the report came out. And Ray goes, "Don't worry about it. I'll blow over in the morning." Worst take ever. Worst take. Because that became to a point where Brady Wright got the injunction and they thought he was going to win, then he wasn't going to win, and eventually had to take the 4-game suspension. And I'm not saying Brady was completely innocent, but did it impact the game? Absolutely not. Did they factor science into it? Absolutely not. Now, Brady knew what was going on, don't get me wrong, but those three stories, if you remember them, the hysteria behind them, and the freaking out, and oh my goodness gracious, we need penalties, we need punishments, oh, we need the NFL to drop the hammer on the Saints, the Dolphins, and the Patriots. You look how all three of those stories have aged. The outrage that was there then, we look at it and we take a look back at it a lot differently now. I think Deflategate now is kind of viewed as a joke. The Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin story after yesterday, reading that article, I was wondering what world we're in. Are we in the Twilight Zone? This story popped back up and I saw it yesterday. I go, "What's this clickbait?" And then I'm reading it. I'm like, oh my God. Jonathan Martin is basically saying what was talked about and what was reported, that he never felt like he was actually bullied. So that story now, you kind of crumble it up and throw it out the window. And then also, you had Bountygate, which is probably still the serious out of the three. But if you think that's the first time it ever happened, it's just going to happen doesn't mean it's right. And you shouldn't be paying someone with intent to injure. I totally get that. But I think sometimes we forget that in the four major American sports, football is the most lethal sport on the planet. And sometimes football culture goes way too far. And sometimes football culture gets taken to a length and a level that it shouldn't be. But then there's also some things that happen that the average person or the public hears about it, and we act as if we're surprised, and we're like, oh my goodness gracious, I can't believe this happened. But those are three major scandals. Bountygate, Bullygate, and then also Deflategate. And definitely two out of three of them haven't aged all that great, and we kind of laugh at them. And I think that there's an understanding that, yes, Bountygate was wrong, but that was just part of a football culture at the time that the NFL was trying to clean up, as Bullygate was too, with some of this rookie hazing stuff and also trying to eliminate that old school mentality. Like, Buddy Ryan, you're telling me back in the day he didn't pay people? Right? They had the body bag game. Right? We all remember the body bag game? But oh, Greg Williams says, you take out Brett Favre, we'll pay you this. You know, whoever puts the hardest hit on, we'll give you a bonus. Then it's all, I can't believe that that's happening. So, yes, I get it. The world changes. But some of these stories, especially when you get them in the news cycle, right, when it comes to the NFL and it's the bombshell, explosive, exclusive story, once Pandora's box is open, once there's a little article out there, and it just grows bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it goes to a level of hype that's just absolutely ridiculous. And I'm not saying in all three of those stories, you know, I'm not saying Brady was 100% right. I'm not saying the Saints are 100% right. And I'm not saying that Richie Incognito were 100% right. But were they this much of villains? And were they this much wrong as what the NFL tried to tell you? Because the NFL pondered and basically just bowed down to the mob? No. All right, you have these Wells reports and these investigations. Independent, though. Independent, right? But the NFL's paying, right? So they're going to give you the answers that you want. So I kind of had to laugh yesterday. And I remember, because I remember there was a race element to this with Incognito. And we read you what the voicemails were. And you read those and it's like horrifying. But then you had Jonathan Martin calling back. He's like, I'll kill your whole bleeping family. And that guy's getting bullied? So, you know, there's locker room talk. Now I sound like Trump. Locker room talk. But there is locker room talk that happens in the NFL. And when you have an average person seeing it, you're like, oh, this isn't good. But Jonathan Martin being bullied? He even just said all these years later, and it's too little too late. And once again, Incognito is not a choir boy. Farthest thing from it. But all these years later, I never felt like I was getting bullied. Huh. That's something. Bruce Pearl's going to join us coming up at 5:20 p.m. Eastern time. Great stuff with Roy Williams a few moments ago as well. Coach of the big defense of Hubert Davis, and also said he's never interested in returning to coaching, even though during that whole conversation. Hey, that's why I asked him at the end, what do you do for fun? Hey, he was talking about every college basketball school. He's still plugged in, locked in, and you could tell that he still misses the game. And he said it. I'll give him credit. I remember when he retired Roy Williams. Roy said, I just don't feel like I'm the best man for the job anymore. You know, I felt like I was losing a little. And that's a big fear for coaches, and some of them hang around. Like, if Boeheim was run out of Syracuse, he would have hung on for every last breath that he had. But it was time for Boeheim to go. For Roy Williams, I think he had that fear of, even though he's a legendary coach, I don't want to get to a point where I'm not at the top of my game. And, right, just like with athletes, sometimes it's with teams, sometimes it's better to get out 2 years earlier rather than 2 years late. And I still think Roy Williams would be a very successful coach. But when you have the transfer portal, when you have NIL, and you have one of these older guard coaches like a Roy Williams, you know, a Roy Williams and a Mike Krzyzewski, they don't need to adapt. But a guy like Jay Wright, who still could have given probably another 15, 20 years of coaching, Now, 15, he's now 63. You know, he could have coached until his 70s. There's no doubt about that. If he wanted to be involved in this new era of college basketball and college athletics, he would have had to adapt. Even though Jay won two national championships and been to a bunch of Final Fours at Villanova, and Villanova was his school. And for Jay, he didn't want to adapt. And I think the coach is in a tricky spot when they complain about name, image, and likeness transfer portal, because we don't crush a coach when he leaves the school, right? We don't crush a coach when he was making all that money. But when you're used to something a certain way, it's not the easiest to adapt, especially when you've been extremely successful about it. So he lost a lot of good coaches as of late. Now, Coach K and Roy Williams, I get it, they're up there in age. But Jay Wright, that's the one that still annoys me. Because that dude, even though he's really good on TV, but he should still be on a sideline. And as a fan, I feel like we got robbed of at least a decade more of Jay Wright coaching college basketball. Zach Yelp Show, Infinity Sports Network. Come on back. We'll update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We get to a news brief next. Update time first. Here's Zach.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Hey, Stu, by the way, I say this all the time. I'll get to the news brief here in just a second. Sometimes you say one thing 1 week, and then the next week, you look like a complete fraud and hypocrite. We had a conversation last week where I made fun of something that you were telling me you were going to do. Where when I tell you later on in the show that I'm doing that exact same thing that I made fun of you for doing last week, well, now I'm going to be doing that next week. So you have no clue what I'm talking about, I don't think,
right? I don't think so.
But you said something last week that I laughed at. And I'm like, I don't get why people do that anymore. And now I'm doing the exact same thing coming up next week when I'm on vacation. I will get to what it is coming up later. But anyway, let's get to a news brief. Here is LeBron James as LeBron James announces hours before the All-Star game. Yeah, I'm not playing.
You won't see anything from me tonight. Unfortunately, I will not be in uniform tonight. Still dealing with ankle and foot discomfort, so I will not be playing tonight, unfortunately. I hate that, but I'm looking forward to seeing the format. This is the first year for it. I know we got a lot of great, call us the OGs, that's hilarious. We do got a few guys with gray hairs, so that makes sense. But, that should be fun. I saw the quote the other day with DK with somebody who's going to play against me. So I guess I'll see him at practice, and hopefully I'll be in practice. We can go at it then.
Yeah, when Dalton Connect is a part of this All-Star game, guy was supposed to be traded, and then a physical failed somebody else, and then he doesn't get traded. And we need to see the rising stars or whatever it is in the All-Star game. The format just sucks. But LeBron, lame James, that's what he was. Lame James, very lame. You know, I know that this All-Star game is a joke, but you knew you weren't going to play, but you needed everyone to basically just massage your ego, so you wait until a few hours before the game. He should have announced this days ago, so that's lame. Here is Draymond Green on LeBron James' last-second All-Star game scratch, NBA on TNT. Draymond Green, Jalen Rose, and Vince Carter.
I think Bron could have helped somebody else out and said this.
Said it earlier so they can find someone else. So you can go in and play. So you can go play.
I ain't that type of year, but somebody out there. Deep book.
There's a lot of guys who are worthy of that. Like you said, he's close.
He took a roster spot from somebody.
Yeah. Interesting.
So you know what? I actually have an opinion change on Draymond Green. I was very tired of Draymond Green. I had a lot of Draymond Green fatigue. You may not like everything he says, and he could be a hypocrite. There's no doubt about that, but we could all be a hypocrite. And it still annoys me with the guy that he punched in the face, Jordan Poole, and he basically takes zero accountability, but he keeps on talking about it. That still bugs me. But Draymond Green at least tells you what's on his mind. And you know Draymond Green is buddy-buddy with LeBron James. He's been sucking up to him, puckering up the last few years to LeBron James because he thought LeBron was going to maybe join him in Golden State. That is as critical as you'll hear a player in the league be of LeBron James. It actually has a name. You know, I'm not talking about Dylan Brooks or any of these guys. Like, someone that actually has clout in the league. And that's a good job by Draymond Green. Yeah, he could have given his spot to somebody else. And he could have made somebody else's All-Star weekend. So, good job by Draymond. I've actually found some respect for Draymond Green. And this is more respect for Draymond Green. He hates the new All-Star game format. Listen up.
1 to 10, your thoughts of the format?
10 being the best?
Yes.
A zero. Sucks. Sucks.
Was that a Sports Talk Radio caller, or is that Draymond Green? Oh, Adam Silver, how do you like that?
Sucks.
That's your product. That's your player. And Draymond Green, this league, this All-Star game, this format, it sucks.
Sucks.
It blows. It's horrible. Draymond. Draymond, I won't say anything negative about you for a month, all right? You've got a month. I am not allowed to say anything negative about Draymond Green from February 17th to March 17th. All right? If I do, Stu, I want you to get on the air and be like, Zach, attention, warning. You cannot criticize Draymond Green for a month. Expires on March 17th. We'll see if I could hold up my end of the bargain like of that. Alrighty, let's get to Draymond Green. Oh, more Draymond Green. Now they get a Draymond jersey. The NBA is boring. Listen up.
I saw a clip not too long ago where Kobe said, like, yo, it's accidental basketball. And he couldn't have been more right. It was so refreshing to play against Bron because every possession is like a chess match. But you don't just get that on a regular basis. It's just who can run faster, who can hit more threes. It's no substance. And so I think it's very boring.
I'm with him. The regular season product, it sucks. So why should anyone be surprised that the All-Star game is terrible when the players don't even give a rat's ass about the regular season? But the legendary Oscar Robertson, he was on Sirius XM NBA Radio. I always love when the old heads and Draymond fight. It's always great. It's always, always fun. And Oscar Robertson said, Draymond's calling the NBA boring now? Okay, let me get you a little response here.
Who cares what Draymond says? It doesn't mean anything. You know, people, this is what I mean. You know, I mean, one guy can say this, and one guy can say that. The game is the game is what it is. People either like the game or they don't. And I think people enjoy the game, especially if their team can win. And if you look at the basketball, it might be boring him because if he's not passing the ball to Curry, what is he doing? It might be boring to him at times because of what he's doing, maybe it is boring. When he's out there, he's not shooting a lot. He's not guarding a lot. So it's boring.
I am advocating and imploring Draymond Green to have an emergency podcast. If we get on the air tomorrow or by the end of the show, tomorrow, today, whenever, we don't have a response from Draymond Green about this. I haven't seen one yet. I can't wait for that. In the words of Terrell Owens, get your popcorn ready. Ooh, that's going to be fun. My guy, Draymond Green. Love him. Kevin Durant. So Draymond Green claimed he's already been offered to be the next head coach of the Golden State Warriors whenever he wants it. All right, KD, let's get your thoughts.
I think Draymond would be an incredible head coach. I think he'd be a better head coach than he would be a TV analyst.
Lying.
He's pretty good at that.
We hate each other.
He loves being on the floor. He loves teaching. He loves that competitive nature of you know, competing on the court. And I think if he would go into TV, he would just be clawing and itching to get back on the floor. So, yeah, I think he'd be a great coach.
I think Draymond Green would get the most technical fouls ever if he was a head coach. I can't see him being a head coach. I can't. Ugh. Imagine we got a head coaching matchup. Well, I can't say anything critical about Draymond right now. Imagine if J.J. Redick had a head coaching matchup up against Draymond Green. I know I'm rooting for it. Draymond. My guy, Draymond Green. Let's go to Dwayne Wade. He was on the Trophy Room podcast with Candace Parker, and he had a little story about the big three coming together in Miami.
So I knew on July 4th, Bron brought the conversation up to me on the phone. And I was like, you play with me, bro? July 4th, we all got on the phone and we all decided that, all right, we're going to do this. Chris and I signed July 7th and LeBron is going to sign July 8th. So I know this. But while I was a little shook because LeBron stopped answering his phone after July 4th, didn't hear from the man. So, you know, reaching out to him, making sure we still good because this is a very
tough decision. Did you triple text?
Bro, I was doing all, I didn't want to do too much. You know what I'm saying? But I'm like, hey, we still good? He said, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. We don't even play in South Beach. It took me a minute when he said that. I was like, where he going? I was a little nervous.
I had to be left in the dark a little bit. That's classic LeBron. Tell everyone what it is, then have a bunch of drama. And then he did something for charity, right? The Boys and Girls Club in Connecticut, which was great. But you made the team that you were leaving. You know, those their fans furious because it's one thing to get a divorce when you leave them in that fashion, and obviously a lot has changed because LeBron went back and then won a championship in Cleveland. Cleveland, this is for you! But at the time, that was not a good look for LeBron James. Giannis Antetokounmpo talks about the possibility of a World versus USA All-Star Game format.
I would love that. And for sure, like, I'll take pride to that. I always compete, but like, I think that will give me a little bit more extra juice to compete. Like having like Shea, Jokic, Luka, Wemby, Towns, Shagun, like having all those players, you know, playing with you. And obviously I'm missing some guys right now. I cannot think from the top of my head. Going against the best USA players, US players, I think it'll be fun.
Maybe do a little country pride. You know, in this case, it would just be USA versus the rest of the world. And you kind of take a page sort of out of what the NHL did in this four-nation tournament. Finally, Giannis Antetokounmpo on the possibility of a one-on-one All-Star Game challenge.
If I had the chance to play one-on-one with anybody, I would love to do it. Sometimes you forget, like, to be a good one-on-one player, you got to be able to play both ways. Like, you got to get a stop to get the ball. If you don't get a stop, you're not getting the ball. You know, so it's kind of hard, like, say if, like, Kyrie Irving going against Wemby. He got to get a stop. It'd be fun.
All right, I have your word. You'll do it?
I can't promise. I don't make no promises. But if I'm healthy, I'll probably
classic NBA answer. Great idea. Oh, you have to actually play? And Giannis is a good guy, let's be clear. I can't give you my word on that one. I don't think that would ever happen. It'd be awesome if it did. But I think players would be too concerned about getting hurt, and I think they'd also be too concerned about getting their egos just damaged if you end up losing. I think we should, you know what? Here's my idea to fix the All-Star game. Wemby against everybody else. You just do Wemby one-on-one challenges against everybody else. Because Victor Wembanyama is like an alien when I watch him. He is unbelievable. And that was the most interesting part of the All-Star game. It was just seeing Victor Wembanyama play. Man, that's a guy you'd spend money on to go see. And there's not a lot of players right now in the NBA you go spend money on to see because you don't even know if they're going to show up. To be clear. But Wemby, I would be okay with spending the money. Then if you find out he's out, I'd be okay because it's worth it if you end up seeing him play. But I am just enamored by Victor Wembanyama. Bruce Pearl going to join us 25 minutes from now. When we come on back, I have an ideal NBA dunk contest.